today, the EV oil toss-up in the current context. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, on the latest post covering finance and property news. Well, we know there's a lot going on, and one of the things there, of course, is the oil price. And, well, what are the implications of what's going on? And specifically, what does it mean for transportation? Well, I'm joined by Damien Klatten from Nucleus Wealth, who's been doing a lot of work on this. Hi, Damien. How are you going?
Not too bad, Martin. Well, you know, absent all the meltdown obviously happening in world markets, and we discussed, you know, in the intro, we could spend an hour talking about that, but we could just focus in on this one issue, I think, for this time. And I'm sure we'll be talking in the future about what's going on.
Yes. Well, we actually touched on it just a couple of weeks ago. I'll put the link below. And we pretty much got the call right in terms of suggesting that this wasn't going to play out over just a few days. It was going to be significantly longer. And one of the real indications, of course, is the oil price. And today we can see the Brent oil futures is hovering around 100 US. Of course, Iran is suggesting that we might see 200 US. But the economics is really the interesting thing. And specifically, Damien, the economics of the question of how do ordinary people get around? And you've been doing some work. And what's fascinating here is that, you know, there is a break point. There is a point at which the move from oil-powered vehicles to electric vehicles makes perfect sense. And so this is a really interesting time to have this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And because it's a moving target, as we've seen, you know, it's a question about how far you drive every year. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. It's a question as well about the price of batteries, and that's been coming down quite sharply. And then the question of the oil price. And so it's sort of moving these couple of levers. And I guess there is another part which is saying, I do want to start by upfront saying, look, people don't buy cars just on strict economic reasons. You know, I think there's obviously people who are more than willing to pay double or triple the price than the basic car to get, you know, all the extras and stuff like that. But so I guess what I'm really talking about here is saying, you know, there are a number of cars now where you can sort of get pretty much the same version, either in a petrol version or an electric version. And I guess that's what I'm talking about in terms of saying, you know, when you get down to that point, how much extra am I paying for a battery versus the car, and then what do I save in terms of that? And that's really complicated as well, because when you start talking about different countries, because it's really about the relative price between petrol and oil. So you might look at a country somewhere like Europe where you go, okay, electricity prices are quite high, so therefore it's not as good. And then you're like, yeah, but petrol prices are really high. And they've got really high taxes, whereas China's, you know, a bit the opposite, and both of these are low. And so it's really about the relative pricing between those that affects it. And then the question about you know, how big of a battery you need is the other big one. And so I've tried to sort of put that all into one chart. And I might start with that one if I can, Martin. I'll show the US version. So I've got bear with me for a second. So the oil price is on the bottom. So you're going from zero up to $100, zero up to $200 on this, and then on the other axis is how many years does it take you to get a payback on your electric vehicle? Now I have made an assumption that it's about $300 a year cheaper to service electric vehicles, just as a lot fewer moving parts and they don't need as much servicing and all that type of stuff. I think that's probably an underestimate, but you know, just trying to be relatively conservative. That's $300 in developed markets. It's a bit cheaper in China, but you're basically then saying, well, I'm paying extra for a battery, and then I'm saving money by charging it. What's that saving being? And I'm assuming if there's about 80% of your charging gets done at home within these. And so the blue line, the dark blue line in the middle, I think is probably the best one to focus on. That's a 400 kilometer range battery, because it really does matter how big the battery is. If you're happy to go, say, with the bottom one, which is 100 kilometer range, then you know, at $100 oil, you're getting your payback in a year. So you pay, you know, on a battery like that, might cost you, you know, two grand more or $2,500 more to put that battery in. But you're saving that in petrol every year. And then, as you go up and you go, well, the 400 kilometer is about what the average car gets sold at in terms of that range. So 250 miles, 400 kilometers. And at the top end of that is your 800 kilometer range, which is sort of more towards some of your longer range Teslas and things like that. And so, yeah, I think that's sort of a reasonable guide. I think that middle line's worth the one focusing on. So, at where we were at sort of $50 or $60 oil, it was about a 4-year payback for cars in the US. Once you're at 100, you're talking more like 2.5 to 3 years in terms of the payback on that. So, yeah, really getting down to those levels where I think consumers will just start making, obviously there's not everyone, but if you want to make a financial decision based on this, I think there's a pretty the argument's getting pretty compelling in the US. The other thing to keep in mind within that is it does depend on how far the average consumer drives. So that one I've got is the average US consumer, which do drive a lot further than other countries. So yeah, I think you'd find in cities the payback will take you a bit longer, but in country areas, the payback's a lot faster on these cars. So that's your US consumer. Does that make sense, Martin?
Yes,
Before I jump
it
in, start
does.
jumping through other countries.
And two quick questions. The first question is, there is, of course, quite a chunky cost of replacing the battery train down the track sometime, right? And I don't know what assumption you've made there in terms of the duration of the life of the batteries, because I do think that some people are now beginning to trip over this, that actually it's pretty good for the first few years, and then suddenly, bingo, you've got to actually check. Replace the battery train. And the other, and the,
Well,
sorry, and the
sorry.
other question is, when you actually are charging it at home, are you actually taking any account of the fact that you might have solar panels and therefore be able to actually get some credit back for the charging processes that you have at home? And how does that play in?
So I've got a different one. So I'll follow in on Australia for that one. With the battery, no, I haven't taken any account of changing the battery. I think there's a couple of things that we're seeing with EVs for, and when we're looking at large fleet operators, which I think is a pretty good indicator of what the costs will be like overall. So first, the batteries are lasting a long time. Often, most of them sort of have 8-year warranties, and so that they're lasting longer than that. And I think 10 years plus is pretty. I think is what the industry is sort of thinking is pretty reasonable within that. So I haven't taken any account of that, mainly because these numbers we're talking about 3 years worth of replacement. So we're basically saying, look, 3 years to get your money back. So it's basically saying, yeah, I've bought an EV, I've paid whatever $5,000 extra for it. I've got that back in 3 years on cheaper petrol prices. Yeah, if I have to replace the battery after 10 years, well, I'm still miles in front on the whole deal. Whereas that was a much bigger deal when you're talking about a 7 or a 10 year replacement. You're like, yeah, I'll, it's a 10 years to get my money back. This was what the case was 3 or 4 years ago. It takes you 10 years to get your money back, and then you've got to stick a new battery in there, and you're like, yeah, you're back to square one again. And so, whereas that's just not the case. And if we're going to $150, $200 oil, then those numbers come down quite quickly in terms of the economics and that. And I do think there will be, if we get that stage, and hopefully I'm jumping at shadows, but it does seem as if that we're on that path at the moment. Is that probably means in at least a couple of countries, and Australia is probably one of the key ones for it, and the UK probably as well, is a question of rationing and whether there will be enough petrol, and whether you start running into fuel queues and stuff like that. And I do think there's this is the toilet paper version of what we saw in the pandemic, and I do think there's that part where there will be a bit of a rush for EVs at that point, for people to say, well, I just don't want to be stuck in that. I don't want to be stuck in that scenario, and so therefore, it makes sense to have an EV rather than be reliant on petrol. But I have been saying overall, that's for as if as a climate change, if you're worried about climate change, then this is actually an excellent thing for climate change in the long term, because we saw a big push away from fossil fuels when Russia sort of pulled was. attacked Ukraine and lost all that Russian fossil fuels. This is just that again on and plus more, because people, anyone who was like, oh, I really should have done something when I saw that thing from Russia, and well, this time I am going to do something, or I was doing something, countries that were trying to get away from these fossil fuels after Russia, and they're just going to accelerate that process. Now some of them will be back to coal in the short term, but just because it's local and things like that. But I do think there's this is a positive for climate change, despite being a big negative economically.
And yes, well, I think that's absolutely right. And one other quick question. Obviously, in Australia, the marginal price of electricity is driven by the price of gas. And so if you actually are being having to charge at home from that marginal price of electricity, the cost of the electricity could be up quite a bit. So it actually does depend on how that part of the generation cycle
Equation
actually
goes
works
as
too.
well. Yeah, that's right. But yeah, exactly. But I think the thing though, if you looked at from that perspective and you said, okay, there's a bit of relativity as well. So you go, okay, so let's say I'm spending $5,000 on petrol or $2,500 on electricity, and both of those double. Is that like, okay, well, I've gone from saving $2,500 a year to saving $5,000 a year now because it's no longer. Yeah, there is that part about saying as long as they go up at the same rate, then you're still far better off in the lower one. If the gas price does go up by more, if the electricity price goes up by more than what the petrol price does, but for me that's not a that not yeah not a likely scenario, and it'd be interesting. It will be very interesting to see how much gouging goes on in Australia at this point. Like we certainly saw it
Gouging.
last time. The whole, we've got all this gas and we're prices are spiking in Europe, and so therefore prices need to spike in Australia. I'll be interested to see how much of that goes on again this time, and hopefully not as much, but yeah, I won't be holding my breath on it.
I'd say don't hold your breath because despite what Bowen is saying, there are already signs of some entities saying, hey, great opportunity. Let me just put my price up a little bit and all of those things. It's unfortunately happening pretty widely, including in the US.
Yes. So next one I wanted to look at was China. I will get to Australia, I promise you. So China's looks a bit worse, actually. It's probably one of the worst ones in here in terms of its payoff. So even at $100 oil, you're still talking 3.5, 4 years. I think probably the difference in China, there's a couple of different things. Much lower electricity prices than elsewhere, but also lower fuel prices. They don't drive as far. The other thing is, it does look like in China there's a more of a willingness to have a smaller battery though, and so if you this next sort of tier down, the 400 is that sort of middle one. The next tier down is a 250. So maybe the Chinese curve doesn't look as it looks pretty similar to the US one, but actually it's mainly because they're just happier to have a smaller battery, and so that whole idea that. Most people aren't driving 250 kilometers a day, and if you are, then this thing makes fantastic sense for you. But if you're like the average consumer driving 20 or 30 kilometers a day, then 250 kilometer battery is fine for most of the time, or 100 kilometers probably fine you for as well for most of the time. And so the payback's much because you just need a battery that's just so much smaller. And so that's yeah, that was a China. Australia looks very similar to China, so in terms of where we sit. So it's again, even $100, it's sort of 3.5 to 4 years. So there isn't that as much impetus, I think, within Australia relative to the US or Europe, which we'll see in a sec, to do that. This is, and keep in mind that this is charging not from your solar. This is charging just at the 80% at the power point, and the other 20% sort of out on the paying for it at superchargers or whatever. At the moment you're probably 4 or 5 years away in terms of the payback. So yeah, it's at which point is more of an emotional decision and less of an economic one, I think, in Australia. But the flip side is Australia really doesn't have much in the way of refining capacity. We really don't have very much in the way of stored petrol, and so I do think if you get fuel shortages and queues at petrol stations, that's probably going to be enough for people anyway to start saying, well, even if my payback's only 4 or 5 years, it's still positive, and And if I'm not worried about fuel queues, it's one less thing to worry about. So that was Australia. Europe, as I said, even despite the fact you've got quite high fuel prices, sorry, quite high energy prices in Europe, the high fuel prices actually bring it right back down. So it looks a lot more similar to the US. You're sort of back down to almost 2 years at $100 oil. And then actually, let me jump forward to the Australian. The solar one we spoke about for Australia was then saying, so effectively what I'm saying here, some people sort of go, oh, well, if I'm getting it off my roof, it's free. It's like, well, it's not really free because you could have sold it back to the grid at pretty poor prices, admittedly, but you can still sell it back to the grid. And so if you put in those prices, yeah, you sort of end up going, okay, now we're under 3 years and closing in on yeah, maybe 2.5 years for your payback within this is all at $100 oil. And you can sort of see those drifting down or up from there. So that was that. And then the one last thing's worth noting. So I spoke about the distance you drive. So yes, this is all based on the average driver, which for Australia was yeah, 13,000 kilometers a year. So if you're doing 20,000 kilometers a year, all that makes way more sense to you. If you're only doing 5,000 kilometers a year, then it doesn't make as much sense for you. So yeah, so these figures are all based on so the average person for this for that. And the other one I did want to highlight though, and along those same lines, is if you then said, okay, well, what about a commercial vehicle? So say you were doing 100, 150 kilometers a day, then this is we're getting down to like, you're getting your money back in a year on this. And this is based on the US numbers here, but yeah, year in a bit. So, commercial already made, a lot of sense commercially to be going electric. And the benefit of a lot of, especially if you're business-based one, so say it's a some sort of logistics delivery or postal service or something where it's a you sort of know, okay, we do 100 kilometers a day and then you turn around and charge this thing, is you can get a much smaller battery and say, well, if I'm only doing 100 kilometers a day and I get a 200, 150 or 200 capacity battery, then I'm not going to run out. I get to charge it every night and do the routes. And the prices, the payback's way faster on those. And you basically if your battery you only need a 200 kilometer battery, you've pretty much halved the price on a 400 versus a $400 battery, 400 kilometer battery. And so yeah, from a commercial sense, absolutely makes sense for in most countries already, if you're driving significant kilometers to be electric and at $100 oil prices, then yeah, redoubles that effect. And on this one, we've got even at $150, you're getting your money back in a year. You hit $150, you're getting your money back in a year on commercial vehicles.
Really fascinating, and it shows you how the pendulum between oil-based and EV is based on the price of oil. As oil prices go up, if it stays high, it's going to put huge potential demand on the EV production. And of course, the question is, well, what is the current capacity? Some of those big international car manufacturers have been dialing back their production of EVs because of lack of demand. So they might have
Demand,
to
exactly.
move the needle back the other way again.
Yeah. Now, China's got lots of capacity. There's and I think this is a big positive for China. So, it's sorry. The EV side's a big positive. They're one of the most affected by the fuel, by the lack of fuel. So that's a huge negative for them. So I don't want to overcut that. But for the EV industry in China, this is a big positive. The other thing to note with the EV industry is it's a lot easier to make an EV than what it is an internal combustion engine. There's iPhone manufacturers who basically assemble iPhones who are now assembling EVs with a view that, look, there's componentized parts. It's not all from the same company. Or for most of the part, it's not all from the same company. It's much easier to put these things together and have a working vehicle than what it is. The whole engineering part of putting together an internal combustion engine around effectively, a controlled explosion takes a lot more engineering than what it does for these EVs. And so, they can probably expand a lot faster as well. I think there's a lot of China's been busy trying to consolidate their EVs production within China just because they've actually had too much production and that there are too many incentives and too many companies opened up. And so Yeah, I think for yeah, I don't think I'm not seeing that as a major problem. Unless we start seeing more supply chain issues come through, but to date, I think that's probably what we're seeing out of the real problem we'll have out of the Middle East is the fuel, is both gas and oil. The other ones, sorry, yeah, so the major ones, gas, oil, fertilizers, are relatively big there as well. And then there's a bit of aluminium, but I don't think that's going to be enough to throw the markets out in terms of the aluminium that's coming out of there, aluminium refining.
Yeah, I think the one to watch is helium, actually, because helium is actually largely produced out of the same region and is actually an input into even things like making semiconductors and other manufacturing processes too. So, there's a few other things to watch. But I think the broad conclusion, and as we come to the end of of this short show, Damien, is that the marginal price of oil as it moves higher really does swing the pendulum quite significantly. And I suspect we're going to see a lot of people running to the garage and saying, please, can I have an EV?
I think you're absolutely right. Yes.
Thank you so much for that. And I'll look forward to having you back on in a couple of weeks when we can review the markets, by which time, who knows where they'll be.
I know. Yes. Yes. Well, I suspect we might need to do another show, maybe next week to talk about what the fallout of the latest, or other, rather headed back up as a deal's been done, or headed back down as things get worse.
Well, the real question, of course, is, go to cash, not go to cash, hang on, not hang on. But that's for another show, Damien. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the research. Links and things below. See you later.
Thanks a lot, sir.
Bye.